There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's nothing better looking than a 911 short wheelbase on steelies.
They had a particular steel wheel that went around the brake caliper, and it was a really, really interesting shape, and it looked better than the optional alloy wheel.
Everyone wants a rocket, so they're about 250,000 quid now, if you can get one.
Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode 59. Like Garage 59, with whom I used to race and had a good outing at Alton Park in the first round of British GT. Well done, Andy and the team. Starting off this week, what mechanical aid would you fit to a car and why? I think that race car intro might have some bearing on what these people say. So, Edward Lovett goes first because this was his suggestion, and he put a really, really good suggestion in the question itself, I think. Off you go.
Was this my suggestion?
I think it was. Well, it came through from a listener.
Well, I don't think it was because I've misread the question. And my answer was an iPhone.
Right. Whilst Edward composes himself, I will pass on to Neil Clifford, whose idea it might have been. Help me here, Neil Clifford.
Yes, so it was either myself or Mr. Cooper.
There we go.
Circulation of the long lists.
Yeah.
I have a secret love of cruise control. In any car that's got cruise control, I use it. We probably should do a whole podcast on cruise control and the benefits of cruise control.
Etiquette.
But yeah. And particularly the cruise control in the modern cars where you get the whole speed adjustment thing and the laser beam and all that. I love that. But I would fit cruise control to any old shitter that doesn't have it because I just adore cruise control. It's sort of it's the lazy man in me, I suppose.
Interesting.
What car? The 73 Porsche 911 has that little... with the heater down here, got the little heater adjuster, but you've also got that little other lever that basically is the first modern day cruise control.
Because it's basically the fast idle for warming the engine up.
Yes. And you can use that as cruise control, really, because you can just set your accelerator at about 4,000 revs, take your foot off, and it keeps going.
Right. I have to say, my small brain is perplexed at the moment. I've asked a mechanical aid to fit to a car and why. Edward Lovett has answered an iPhone and you've answered cruise control. Luckily, that is a mechanical cruise control. So I'm going to let you get away with this. The whole laser beam thing you can't have because that's not...
It's like an early 911, that little lever. Okay. That should be on all old cars because then you can just cruise along, not break the speed limit, which is not a very clever thing to do because a man comes along and gives you 12 things. And then you can't drive anymore. So to set yourself at, like, I don't know, what's the safe limit? 78 in a 70, maybe? Clearly not, really.
Apparently, Not so much these days.
Not so much these days. You haven't got that 10% rule anymore, have you?
It's going, apparently. I really love living in the UK. It's a great place at the moment.
Are you saying that if you bomb down a motorway at 72 miles an hour, you are going to be done?
That should be okay. A friend of mine has just been, who lives in London, actually not far from you, Manish, said that she was caught and noticed for 22 miles an hour in a 20.
Yeah.
I drove up Park Lane on Monday and it was very quiet. And I was doing about 32 miles an hour and then very quickly realised it was actually a 20.
Yes.
And pulled myself back to 20. And I thought, you know, this is effectively a two-lane highway. Yes, it's in the middle of London. But you can very easily get caught out.
Yeah,
and of course they have plenty of cameras there to catch you.
But in London, you've got options because if you're worried about how much that will cost you in points, you can just take a machete and go and steal someone's Rolex. That'll pay for the points, and you won't ever get caught. So
that is true.
The answer is carry a machete and steal whatever you need to steal.
Yeah, good consumer advice.
Good consumer advice.
Right, Chris Cooper, mechanical aid and why?
Well, I'm glad you asked me this. I had quite a long list of mechanical aids, but when I read them back to myself, I realized that most of them I couldn't read out loud in public.
Okay.
So, but I have got some that I think are quite good. So I think a mechanical wheel changing device would be a really good thing to have on a car. In other words, some mechanical contraption concealed about the car that when you wanted to change a wheel, because you'd specified the spare wheel in your modern car, but anybody who does that realizes you need the strength of Hercules to lift it out of the boot. So I'd have a wheel changing device secreted about the car. I'd also have, I quite like this one, I would have a robotic boot opening and retrieval device. Because when you're on a journey, the last thing you want to do is stop, because the thing you wanted isn't in the pocket, it's in the boot. And stopping is just not a bloke thing to do. So if you had a mechanical robotic boot opening and retrieval device, you could activate this thing. It would crawl over the car, open the boot, find the thing you wanted. I've got something here that I can't read my writing. It says suck, thump, rattle. But I think what I meant to write was...
That's a U2 album. It's a U2 album, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a squeak and rattle thumping device.
Yes. I had that.
So... when you're driving, you don't want to stop because, you know, if I stop and try and find the rattle, it won't rattle and then I'll go again. So some rattle. But the pièce de résistance of mechanical aids in a car would be a touchscreen manipulation device. I called it the button butler. I think I want something here. The button butler, if actually the boys said, Dad, call it a button butler. So it would be on a Range Rover, Jerry, where everything is in the bloody touchscreen. I just want a button butler who could say, you could say to the button butler, because you could buy yourself in the car, could you recline the seat a little bit, please? And so we'll go into the button butler, the mechanical thing, we'll go do, and eventually, he probably wouldn't be very good at it, but eventually he'd find the screen and you say left or right, right a bit. A bit like watching The Golden Shot. How old am I?
Isn't there already a button butler with its voice control system?
Well, that doesn't work. If you do that on a Range Rover, it says, I'm sorry, I can't take you to Timbuktu.
Also, the button butler is going to end up in jeopardy or potentially in danger of swearing a lot, because you're going to say, button butler, can I have the left front seat reclined, please? Then it's going to go, I can't fucking find it. Who put this menu in? It's going to start saying Jerry loudly. I mean, you're
in danger. It might do.
You're in danger.
Hopefully, they're not going to use you, Chris, as the voice behind the back.
Oh, God, can you imagine that?
Yeah, see, this is the Mark. I'm talking about the Mark One button butler to manipulate all those touchscreens. So, in the Mark One version, because this was a minimum viable product, to use the vernacular of the youthful and agile and tech savvy. The minimum viable product version, the MVP version of my button butler, wouldn't have voice reply. I might leave it there. So I think there's loads of mechanical aids that will be useful to fit a car, and a load more I can't say out loud in public.
Okay. I'm going to contribute now. There's only one, really, isn't there? There's only one, and that is it's for old cars and new cars. It's a device that wipes the inside of every single window you get in the car. If it steams up on a cold day, how many middle-aged strains and injuries are caused by leaning across?
That's
and you just reach out and give it a wipe, and then you hear it go ping your shoulder or your arm, and then the heated rear screen never works, or a bit of it works because the car's old and rubbish. You just need a device. You press a button, and a wiper comes out and goes, and it does it does every single inside glass surface. And once you've got that, frankly, you're the mustard. You could do anything. You could achieve anything. I'm moving on. Manish Pandey.
I broke this into three parts. I thought you'd probably want just every brilliant James Bond device. That's the first thing you'd probably want. Yeah, I'd want an ejector seat. I love that thing that came out and mashed Tilly Masterson's tires in Goldfinger. I thought that was great. Machine guns. I like the oil spray from the Esprit.
Pretty handy when you're parked in Belsize Park as well.
Well, then you never know. and then I thought augmented burglar systems, like you want some kind of bear trap if someone sits in your 456, don't you? Whap! And he's still there the next morning. You know, that's just great.
He's just there twitching in the trap.
Exactly. You can just take him to the morgue at the Royal Free, 2 minute drive. But actually, I've shared this with you. You know, if my future purchase goes ahead as planned, I quite fancy doing a bit of spannering myself.
You might have
miss working with my hands. I worked this out. It doesn't have to be big stuff, little stuff. Anyway, do you remember how Thunderbird 2 had those sort of hydraulic lifts so the Thunderbird would lift up and the pod would fall down?
Yeah.
I think cars should have that. They're like aerials upside down.
And
you can change your tires with them. You can just a pneumatic telescopic.
Yeah, like pneumatic jacks. Race cars have them. Yeah.
You need an air jack system from a GT car is what you need.
Yeah.
That's what I would like.
With an onboard air supply. Pump some sort.
All those years ago.
That's what I want. I can work on the car. I can change its wheels. I love the idea of that.
All those years ago, you've got to give credit to Fisker, because all those years ago, Henrik Fisker must have sat there thinking, wouldn't it be great if you were driving along and you needed some fuel but you didn't really want to stop because you only got another 50 miles to go. If I had solar panels on the roof of my car to charge the battery to get me the last bit of the journey. That was quite a good idea, wasn't it? It didn't work. No one bought the car, but it was a bloody good idea.
When you started that anecdote, I was rather distracted because I thought it was going to be a Julian Clary story.
Yeah, same here. He should have changed his name by deed poll because it's way too close to that word.
Yeah. But actually, I did write the wrong answer down. But the Manettino switch when they bought it out in the Ferrari, that's a bloody good advice. And if you feel a bit adventurous and you've got a bit of open space and you can see what Ferrari developed with the what's the state, you've got traction off and then you've got everything off, but if you just take the traction off, it allows you a percentage of drift, and it's a remarkable tool, and it can make anyone who's not particularly talented look very talented, and I'm guessing what the Ferraris and all the Formula One cars have on their steering wheels, which are these sort of 10 stage traction systems, or what they used to have, from one to one being, let's say, 10% drift to 100%, which is all everything off. Brilliant tools.
Yes.
Who here, this is a first world problem, struggles with their angle of attack for the Manettino switch? I can never work out whether I want to just use my forefinger and thumb, or sometimes I want to get in there and I want to sort of turn it, but then my shoulder's up and I want to make sure I want to make a positive movement. I can never articulate that little jelly bean quite right. That could be taken out of context, but I really can't quite get the old bean right.
Is the jelly bean on the latest ones? Is it tap tonic or whatever it's called? What's the terminology?
It probably is. Do you remember the last bit was sprung loaded, wasn't it? You had to spring it forward.
You really wanted it.
Yeah, fair play. So I think we've covered all bases there, haven't we? We're all done. Well done, team. What a fantastic list of suggestions. We should never design cars. Steel wheels are better than alloy wheels. Discuss. Chris Cooper.
I'm glad you asked me that. I think it's about, there are two reasons I've got where they are. One is fitness for purpose. So I think I sent you a picture of that. I'm going to show it to people now. So this is, I mean, that.
What?
Oh, yes. 205 rally wheels.
205 rally. That car would look daft with alloys on it. There are some cars, I mean, technically steel is more malleable. It's cheaper to make a wheel. You stamp them out in the thousands. Alloy wheels were originally referred to as light alloy wheels. But when they got to 23 or 24 inches, light is the last quality you'd commend in them. So I think it's about fitness for purpose. So light, little, sporty, cheap road cars where it's easier and quicker to stamp out a nice little simple-looking steel wheel for 205 rally. But those cars have gone. Off-roaders, proper off-roaders. So again, I sent you guys a link of that Defender. There's a Defender site somewhere where they've got, there we go, that one there. You can't really see that.
Yeah.
Proper Defender on steel wheels. And so I think on a Defender, an original Defender, but on the current Defender, in fact, Edward, your company Defender has these wheels.
It
the
does.
The white painted steel wheels. And on the county pack, on the current Defender configurator, they've also got an option of a 20-inch steel-painted white wheel.
Yeah, they're 20 lovely.
20-inch steel wheel.
That's 20-inch, not the 18-inch you've got.
That just looks so much better to me.
So I have to say, on that thing there, I have a sneaky suspicion that might not be steel. It might be alloy masquerading as steel. But let's just pretend it is steel. So I think on that stuff, fitness for purpose. There's another reason why steel might be better than alloy. There are too many alloy wheels that just look shit. And that's a simple true. Steel wheel might look better. But if it errs too much away for fitness for purpose, then steel fails. So on a proper off-roader, Land Cruiser, whatever it is, a nice, cheap, easy replaceable, easy fixable, stamp them out by the thousand steel wheel, I think is better than alloy. And those people, you all know who you are, who are designing shit alloy wheels, steel's coming for you.
Yeah.
He's rehearsed that. Neil Clifford.
I think there's not much I need to say here. Mr. Harris will get this. There's nothing better looking than a 911 short wheelbase on steelies. There's just nothing better looking than that. You have those little Rostar wheels on, which I've had, and obviously on an RS maybe it looks better, but when you put those little thin steel wheels on an old short wheelbase 65, 66, 911, it's automotive orgasmicness.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything prettier. Maybe a Lotus. The other thing that I adore is a Lotus Cortina Mark One on those steelies with a slight lip. You know, it's got a little bit of a lip, so it's a bit different to the 1600E or, you know, the Super Cortina. It's got that little lip
bit
to
of
it.
Offset.
I think they're steelies probably on the early Cortinas. I suppose they're all now made of magnesium or titanium if they're racing at Goodwood with 500 horsepower and still look like a normal Cortina. But for me, it's all about the short wheelbase 911 on steels. It's unbeatable, really.
Yeah, you're not wrong. What a great looking car. And also, what a great reminder of simple pressed steel wheels.
That's what I was going to. I think simplicity is the thing. You know, I think we've all admired lots of different alloy wheel design, but it has got quite complicated. And when you start to look back at those early 911s, and when you take the hubcaps off, they look even better.
That's right.
But you know, some of the 50s and 30s, 40s, and 50s designs in America, just those very simple those wheels were beautiful. Rotti Form, which is one of the big wheel manufacturers in America. I think it's owned by Wheel Pro, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
But they've started doing alloy versions of the steel wheels, so you can go and get your Satisfaction and stick them on your GR Yaris there. But go and check out Rotti Form. They do some great wheels for new Defender as well. We saw one in Abu Dhabi when we were out there last time. They're probably 22 inch, Chris.
I think everyone's hit on some key points here. The construction process of the steel wheel means that you can't cock about with it. It doesn't have strength in the areas that an alloy wheel does, so you can't have massive open spaces. You can't have thin spokes, really. Hence wire wheels. It's a bit like, for me, it's a bit like the ignition key. If you have an ignition barrel in a car, the designer can't cock about too much. They've kind of got to create something that goes into that lock barrel and turns a key. If you remove that, then everyone decides to invent their own version of it, and it's mostly shit. The alloy wheel's the same. These alloys are so clever, they allow negative spaces to exist on a wheel, and people get a bit carried away. And sometimes the results are stunning, I admit. You know, a 1992 512 TR wheel is a thing of beauty. But some of them, latterly, really are shite. So I've got one, though. I'm going to list one that is above all others. Perfect for me. I think New Defender on Steelies is the best-looking modern steel wheel application I've seen. I think when I saw the car, I thought it was 10% better looking overall when I saw the steel wheel. I thought it was so perfect. I think a UN spec Land Cruiser in white with steel wheels is, I know these vehicles tend not to be in the happiest places in the world, but the vehicles just look so damn good. I think any Mini on a steel wheel looks right in a way. And I spent my youth trying, like anyone, trying to fit Wolf Races and special three spoke. What were those three? Revolution four spokes and three spokes.
Yeah, Revolution four spokes.
Of course, looking back, they all look shit. The steel wheel looks miles better.
Yeah.
In penultimate place for me is a really good space saver wheel. Sometimes that interesting shapes you have in steel wheels because they have a narrow little wheel, but it's got to get round the brake caliper.
Yeah.
So these quite interesting sort of almost circular shapes that protrude around the brake caliper. Yeah. But I give you, there was one car maker that could do steel wheels in a way, mid-80s to mid-90s. It was Vauxhall. And they used to do, do you remember the Vauxhall, the 84 Astra SR?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
They used to make, there were two Astras, that and the facelift, and the revised car, that had a particular steel wheel that went around the brake caliper. And it was a really, really interesting shape. And it looked better than the optional alloy wheel.
It did.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You have those little geometric, little triangle shapes.
It did.
And you inverted or alternated triangles around
the wheel. Just blow my nose. It's hay fever. It's often seen as on the bill. The bill had lots of these things running around as unmarked police cars in the early 90s. And I'd always look at them and go, I might put the bill on just to see if I can see a nice set of steelies. So, insight into my sad life. How do you feel about the steel wheel?
Just to be pedantic, steel is actually an alloy. It's an alloy of iron and carbon.
It is.
Tiny bit of pedantism. I mean, can I also say, I think Morris Minor's steelies look fantastic.
Yes.
Favorite steelie, the Morris Minor.
Fantastic.
Color-coded as well, they were back in those days.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, next on our list is, he says, looking at his telephone, what we did this week. I'm going to Manish had a small contribution there, so Manish can tell us what he did this week.
I went up to Vista Heritage and test drove a 456M GTA. And I've already nicknamed her Lola, so you can imagine how hard the salesman's going to have to work with me over the next week or so. She needs a few bits and pieces sourcing, but I am incredibly in love. And I know she's an automatic, I know, but do you know what? We went for a bit of a drive, had a little go at the motorway. Somebody in a Ford tried to tailgate me. I just stroked her accelerator pedal, and it was like going to light speed in Star Wars. He just went like that. It was the most enjoyable growl. She's incredibly civilized. And I understand that, you know, it's supposed to be a big criticism of the 456, far too, quote unquote, restrained. But if there was a car that was built for me, it is Lola. So we're going to sort one or two things out. The other thing is Neil called a mate, sent a mate a text sort of saying, would you mind meeting Manish to check her out? And he went, I've looked after her for 15 years. She's perfect. So she's even got the most amazing vetting. I am trying to get someone to do a final cursory, but I think I may have found her.
Manish, given it's Wednesday morning and yes. This is aired on Friday morning, can I suggest you, if you do want it, give them a call, read your credit card number out to them and pay them a holding deposit, because you might get some cynical sod on Friday morning. If you haven't done that, just call up and say, I'll take that one.
And then, and then phone up Bob Houghton and just give him 20 grand to cover the next 6 months.
Don't put him off.
Now, and also, can I say on behalf of your fellow podcasters and the audience, I think we need to work around the female pronoun. If you gender this thing all the way through, we're going to get sued by someone, because it could be a he, it could be an it. I mean, I don't know what Lola identifies as, but we're going to have to talk pronouns at some point.
I am going to go all J.K. Rowling on your ass on this.
Okay? Are you?
Yeah, I am, okay? Lola is a girl.
There we go. You heard it here first. Neil Clifford, what have you done this week in Cars? If you can't see Neil Clifford, let's just say he's not in the UK. And where he is, there's not much use for Cars.
Well, I'm talking JK, but not JK Rowling.
Okay.
I'm doing another JK. And I wouldn't name drop, apart from the fact that I did pop up, my ugly face popped up on his little Instagram along with our mate Dario. So I went with my mate JK.
Well, you've named dropped twice now.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. JK Rowling. Up to Gordon Murray Automotive to pick up his new T50, which was a fabulous day, as you can imagine. I could rattle on for hours about how good fun that was. Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, the car is phenomenal. I'm sure we'd talk about the car. But more importantly, it's about the people, right? We spent 3 or 4 hours with Gordon Murray, and he talked us around every tiny little element of that car. You know, he is first time I've really met him face to face like that. Total genius. We then spent a good couple of hours down in his private sort of sexy dungeon underneath the building with his personal car collection, which I'm sure that's been on YouTube actually. So it's not as if it's a sort of super private thing, but he's got the most incredible range of lightweight sports cars. I went straight back searching for all sorts of weird Lotuses and Alfa Romeos on all sorts of websites, just because he, you know, his enthusiasm to those cars is completely contagious. And got a whole tour of GMA, met everyone, saw the beautiful engineering that goes into that car, had a wonderful, wonderful day. And the car's off to Topaz to be protected. And then it will be on the road, I think, May or June. So, you know, a very privileged day for me, I think, last Tuesday. And thank you, JK Rowling, for inviting me.
You might not be able to tell us this. What's the significance of the lime green?
Well, it's the badge, actually. So the GMA badge is Jay loves lime greens. It's a colour called, well, his colour is a condor green. Yeah. He did his LaFerrari in that colour. I think
and
it's the same
interior of the Enzo, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So but if you look at the GMA badge, it's that green and blue. Okay. So there's lovely elements of the badge right through the car, back and front of the car. He's always been a big lover of silver with, again, I don't think any of this is secret, silver with green. The silver, Because he wanted it, and it's true, he delivered this. The silver is almost a white silver. So when you stare at the car for more than about 10 seconds, the car actually almost goes white. And they mixed aluminium in with the paint to give it this white effect. It's a really spectacular silver. And then you've got this sort of fluoro green, condor green, and the blue from the badge elements throughout the car. It's very, very obviously stunning in real life. And then you hear the bloody thing start up and you forget really looking at the car, because that engine, again, we've all heard it with Goodwood or on YouTube or whatever. The engine is a phenomenal piece of phenomenal engineering, and it was pissing with rain, so I think we were both relatively relieved we weren't actually driving it. We're driving it. That, I mean, the last time I went there, the weird thing for me is last time I went to that location is because it was originally the headquarters of Bristol, and the liquidation of Bristol Cars, the auction,
was it?
Was there. And I was there in a miserable, bloody Tuesday afternoon in the middle of COVID. You all had to wear masks, bidding. And I bought the sign, as everyone knows, and restored the sign and said goodbye to a lot of good friends that were made redundant. And it was all super bloody miserable. To see that space come back to life as GMA and the investment that's been put in there, and the beautiful buildings and the engineering skills that are there now with all those young people with brilliant jobs. It's a lovely British success story, GMA in total.
So I didn't realise it was the Bristol building. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. So that was
Has he got the test track up and running?
Yeah.
That's cool,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's all super cool. I mean, it's an incredible British success story. And you know, spending one to one, which I've never done, I'm sure you have, Chris, one to one with Gordon and hearing is just genuine. You know, genius and enthusiasm for everything automotive it was really cool. So I was very lucky. He's got the Mark One Escort wasn't there. That was at home.
Yeah.
I think he swaps cars to and from home and the building. It was mainly Alphas, Lotus, cars he'd built himself, you know, from the 60s there. When he was at Brabham.
Was that Alphaholics he's had built there? Was that there? Is it a Zagato of some sort? It's a really weird sort of squared off looking one.
To be honest, there were about six or seven Zagatos. He has an incredible passion for Zagato. And yeah, I think one of them has been right through it by Alphaholics. That was there, yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
One other thing, Neil, did he have his, you know, that he created a kind of kit truck for Africa, I think that's one of the most underrated cars ever. That really could have changed. I don't understand how the UN or whatever didn't get behind that car, because that could have changed transport in the developing world. It's rugged, it's cheap, it's light, it's brilliant, it doesn't break down. It's a perfect vehicle. How that is not in every village in Africa and India, I do not know.
I won't do the engineering of that car any justice whatsoever, so I apologise to Gordon personally. But, you know, I restored and did up a Ford Control Land Rover, which he knew. And I can't even remember the name of the thing, so I deeply apologise. But that vehicle that he's created weighs half the amount as a Ford Control, but can carry three times the weight of a Ford Control.
That's what I just thought. That could be literally globally game-changing, that car.
Other little love that we all regret not buying one on piston heads for $39,995 in about 2003 was the Rocket.
Yeah.
You couldn't give those bloody things away, could you? But now everyone that's got an F1 is getting a T50. Everyone wants a Rocket. So they're about 250,000 quid now, if you can get one.
Oh, they really?
Yeah. They're all part of, you know, if you want, it's like having the Holy Trinity or having the five Ferraris. If you get the T50, the T33, if you've got an F1, obviously, you want a Rocket. It's all part of the Gordon Murray collection. So they're...
that means something different in Bristol, wanting a rocket.
Also,
if you're going to own or buy a rocket, don't drive it on a cold day for the first time, because you might not ever drive it again, I can assure you.
Or anything again.
God, bloody hell. I've never had... It's the coldest feet I've ever had filming anything. Manish, what have you... So we've done Manish. What have you done this week? Other than, sadly, get a really bad dose of hay fever, which is even worse than mine.
Yeah, pretty much that. You know, last thing I've been thinking about is driving cars around, but I'm leaving to Portugal today, so let me see what rental car is waiting for me. The fastest cars in the world.
Yeah. Chris Cooper, what have you done this week?
I had quite an eclectic motoring week. So Neil is allowed us all to celebrate the best of British. There's something else which I think is the best of British, which is this event.
Yeah.
Ooh.
The Land's End Trial. The Land's End Trial was in its 100th edition over the Easter weekend. It's run by the Motor Cycling Club Limited, but it's open to motorcycles, these extraordinary tricycle. They're like sidecars, but the passenger sort of stands and, yeah, exactly, and cars. So I went to see it. I went to see the last stage of it. So a trial, for those of you who, we probably all know what it is, but a trial is not a speed event per se. It's a navigation and getting up awkward slopes and slippery slopes and so forth. It's done overnight. It's a 24-hour event. It literally starts and you don't stop until the following afternoon, Friday onto Saturday, Easter weekend. I went to see it because David Richards, the chair of Motorsport UK and chum of mine from down in Cornwall, was taking part with his wife Karen, which is pretty bloody brave of them. So they were up for 21 hours, probably 36 hours in total. 400 entries. And the reason why I think it celebrates the best of British is because, and I went to watch the last stage on the Blue Hills, just overlooking St. Agnes on the North Cornish coast. It's an extraordinary community. They're all volunteers. I talked to the guy whose field was next door to the final stage, who was letting people park in his field. And he said, we've done this and my father did it before me and his father did it before him. It's just part of what we do. And at the finishing line of the last stage, which is right up a ridiculously, you couldn't walk up it. You think, how is someone going to get up there in a motorcycle? One in every three motorcycles I saw did that sort of, it's going to, and it goes over backwards. And there's literally an army of volunteers there ready to catch them, literally catch them, get the bike started, get it back on. They don't let them give up. They said, look, we'll get you there. Just here's a bit of advice, bit of pushing, but get them all up the hill. Families, kids, mothers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, all there helping do it.
Wow.
Huge community support. People know I'm biased about this kind of stuff. I think motorsport changed my life in lots of ways. But it came to me quite late in life. And I think the Land's End Trial epitomizes the best of our sport. It's incredibly motivating and inspiring. I just loved it. It was a bit of a stormy, wet, windy, horrible day. I spoke to David afterwards and he said the last bit of the Blue Hills bit got quite shiny because cars are going up and polishing the rocks and so forth. So he cleaned the whole thing, which meant he had no penalties, no errors, just got a slight nick right at the end. David has run and been involved in motorsport all over the world. And he said to me on Saturday or Sunday morning when I spoke to him, he said, I'm so glad I've done it. It's the best of British. It's an amazing event. So that was a big part of my motor career. The other part of motorsport, I reapplied for my license, got my 2024 motor racing license. Courtesy of Mark Green, who did my medical monkey. You know Mark Green.
Yeah.
Motor racing medics down in Gatwick. Brilliant, brilliant supporter, passionate love of our sport and getting people involved in it. So a lovely weekend in cars celebrating the grassroots of our sport. And well done to everybody who was involved in the 100th edition of the Land's End Trial.
Special shout out to Johnny Smith, who did that as well from the Smith podcast. Yeah, he was down there in a little. He sent me a photo of the car he was in last night or the night before. It was, let's see if I can find it. It looks like I'd say it was a Hyundai of some sort. Is it a Hyundai? Yeah. There's no, it's a Kia. There's Johnny in his Kia.
Brilliant.
So I'm sure you'll see a video on that soon. So yeah, I think trials.
So it's not age limited at all.
No, drivers or vehicles. No.
Yeah. So what was David doing it in?
He was good question. He was in a Manx Mayors beach buggy.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, brought over from America.
What would you do it in next year, Chris?
It's a good question. There's a separate class for Suzuki X90s. You know, those unloved, horror. There's a separate class just for those.
Yeah.
I don't know how I could do it on a bike. I mean, crikey, bikes fall over on the flat with me just standing there looking at them. So somebody was doing it. I mean, there's all kinds of things. MG Midgets, Toyota MR2s, lots of different four-wheel drive, lots of classes. So something, I think you've got to do it in something open. So an MG Midget, MX5.
In 1996, in the summer, I think it was the same issue of Autocar that the full road test of the Lotus Elise was published, I remember. Autocar's cover had no pictures of a car. It was called Top Tens. So for those of you that love High Fidelity, the film and the book, this was Autocar doing their Top Tens. It remains one of the best issues of the magazine ever. It was brilliant. That's when Sutcliffe and Franklin and all that lot got their heads together. You might remember this. They had all these sort of sidebar extra top tens, and there were big top tens that ran across spreads, and it must have been a 20-page article. And the very last top ten they listed was the worst of things. Well, the last page was the worst of things. And at the bottom of that, they had top ten X90s. And the first nine places were just dashes, and at 10 it just said Suzuki X90, and they cancelled their advertising for several years.
They found their purpose at last.
It just went gap X90. Frankel and Andrew was so proud of it. Well, that's a very uplifting story, and I'll tell you what, I think it was the Hereford trial last weekend as well up country, which is the one that we filmed for Top Gear a couple of years ago. One of the best days out I've had. Spring in the UK, driving through some landowner's orchard in a vintage car, going up a muddy slope, thinking we'll never get up there. And you look right, and there's just someone having a glass of wine and a picnic next to you as you drive past them. It's it could only happen in Britain. So that leaves me. Right, I'll be quick because this has gone on a bit. I discovered this week, and I posted this on Instagram, that my M5 V10 S85 engine, glorious machine that I'm now more and more in love with, has a sensible appetite for oil, particularly if you use the Castrol oil. I bought, randomly, some BMW branded oil, and the oil consumption has disappeared. If you have an old M car, normally we're averse to buying a dealer product, an OEM product. Go and buy the dealer oil. I don't know. I'm told it's a Shell Helix oil inside the tub, but it is more than half the oil consumption of my car. Either the Castrol oil is shite or the BMW, the Shell oil is magic. I can't work out which, but that was the big game changer for me. I also spent some time in my Land Cruiser, which I'm going to do a film on, and I'll talk about another time, which went to the brilliant West Coast Off-Road, who are situated somewhere near the Arctic Circle, so far north. I think it took me hours to get there, days to get there, and they all speak differently. But my God, do they know their way around a Land Cruiser. They've taken all the air suspension off mine, put normal suspension on it, so it's lost a little bit of sophistication in terms of ride, but it's a tank now. It's done 155,000 miles, and it's ready to do another 155. I really am in the zone of making my old cars carry on. I'm not that interested in new cars, which is a problem when you're a motoring journalist. But most importantly of all, what I did this week, something I've not done in 22 years. I had a haircut. I went to someone who cut
my hair. I thought you looked a bit trim.
He trimmed my beard and he cut my hair. And I sat in this chair and I went, and he went, "What can I do you for?" And I went, "I've no idea." And he said, "Why?" I said, "Well, I've not had a haircut in more than two decades. I've not paid someone to cut my hair." It was joyous. I sat there, he sort of prattled at me, and he shaved my head and did this. Do it. If you're like me and you shave your head, go and give someone 20 quid to cut your hair. Don't do it too often. But it was therapeutic. I quite liked it. So there you go. I had a haircut.
And if you have such a haircut, you will end up looking like Fred from the First Dates Hotel. I mean that with great affection. Yeah, you do. You look a load better.
I normally compared to a football manager, because I'm not a footballist. I don't really understand.
There were some signs on the M4 recently for, I can't remember it, some sort of scalp razor or something like that.
Yeah, you skull need
one of those. Oh, the skull cat, the skull
shaver. Skull. Yeah, have you got one of those? Skull.
Yeah.
No, I don't use that. I don't want to go that close. I like just to remind people that if I wanted to, I could.
I'll go and get it.
Follow signs. Bottom 10 thing to buy.
Neil's gone to get his skull shaver.
Has he gone to get his manscaper? I hope we're not. This is not going to deteriorate quickly.
Here we go.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Right, let's move this on whilst Neil's doing that. sleeping here, is it good, Neil? Is it good?
Oh my god, it's a bottom of the second time rocket. Jesus
Christ, do you know what that looked like?
Look at that.
Do you know what that looked like then, Neil? That looked like you, that looks like you've upskirted R2-D2.
Yeah,
it's really good.
So, moving on, sleeping in cars now.
Oh.
I suspect I have a different view of this than the rest of you. So tell us about sleeping in cars, Chris Cooper, while I run off and make myself my second cup of tea of the morning.
I'd be happy to sleep in the sleeping car of the Orient Express. I wouldn't be happy to sleep in cars.
Have you been forced to sleep in a car?
I probably have once, years and years ago. I'm not a fan. I know it probably feels differently. Yeah. I think it's... you never feel... The only good thing about sleeping in a car is getting up in the morning and leaving it. In my book. Go on, Neil. Tell us why I'm wrong.
Well, I'd like to introduce everyone to the micro nap. I'm not talking about sleeping all night in cars. That I have done.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But the micro nap, and I'm sure a lot of people do this anyway. I do it.
Oh, yeah, I've probably done that. Yeah.
I would say once a month, if I'm traveling up to Manchester or Liverpool, or in fact, I've been known to have been caught asleep in central London prior to a meeting, that I just come over all tired. You know, I get up very early in the morning. I play a bit of tennis. I try to, you know, try and sort of get up with the crack of dawn, as they say in Wales. And I come over all tired, and I'm sure we all get this.
I didn't hear that, but I bet he's talking about the micro nap.
Yes, yeah. The micro. Oh, it's fantastic. Now, the micro nap, let me just give you an example of a. I've been known to do a 12 minute micro nap.
Well, yeah, I could do that. It. Yep.
Absolutely. No, but do you do it? We can do many things, but do you do it?
Yeah, literally, it's 10, 15, 20 minutes of. Yeah, and then you wake up and it's like you've had,
It's the best thing about an Apple phone, really, is those alarms, and we've all got about 100 different alarm times, haven't we, that you can pull into the service station and it's 1:20 and you set your alarm for 1:36, and I can be asleep within a minute. And I lock the doors because I'm always a little bit paranoid of someone nicking my bag or something. I do a 17-minute nap, the alarm goes off, and whoosh, off I go again. Much better than a Red Bull.
That is nature's Red Bull, isn't it? That is nature's Red Bull.
It's nature's Red Bull, yeah. And I've had friends tap on my window in central London where I've, you know, it's 1 o'clock. I've got a 2 o'clock meeting somewhere important. I'm a bit knackered. So I have a 14-minute sleep and set my
I used to do that. I used to do that in the race truck when we were racing. I would have literally a 14, 15, 20-minute nap just to think. And you within the hour before the race, and then you get up and you think, right, I'm ready. I'm ready for anything.
Is that what you were doing? I thought you were having time for little Chris. That's explained quite a lot.
That's impressive.
I'm here to help you, Monkey, in moments like this.
I can go sleep in a minute.
I tell you what, that's a skill. That's a skill that you should cherish, because not many of us can do that. And I only learned to do it latterly, but I have to be extremely tired to do it. Manish, have you slept in cars much?
No, I've never slept in a car on purpose as an adult. But I do remember when I was seven, we were in India. I was with my mum, dad and family, and I was in the back of one of my father's brothers, Morris Oxfords. And we were driving from a friend's place back home in Allahabad. And it was a 2-hour drive and it was late at night. And I was that kid who was in the middle of the back seat with one relative on one side, the other relative on the other side. I was gone. And it was a very, very late drive. Basically, they pulled up at home and the person on my right thought the person on the left had taken me in. The person on my left thought the person on my right had taken me in. And I was left in the car. And literally, I do remember this. At about 3 a.m, I woke up and I absolutely cacked my pants, because you wake up as a child, you don't know where you are. I think I'd been in India 5 minutes. So I'm in a country I've not been in for years, in the back of a car that I don't recognize. It's in the middle of the night in India. And I remember I couldn't get the doors open. I started really panicking. Eventually, I got the doors open. I ran to the front. I was pounding on the door going, let me in, let me in, let me in at 3 a.m. And I've never slept in a car since.
Not surprised. It sounds utterly harrowing. Sorry that you had to go through that, Manish. Ed would love it. Do you sleep in cars?
I do. I wish I could have the self-discipline to try and do micro naps, and I might try and do that from Neil's recommendation. One of the reasons I like driving is because I don't like falling asleep in a car. And as a passenger on longer journeys, I find it very difficult to stay awake. I don't know why. It's actually quite nice nodding off as a passenger, but you end up sort of drooling in your seatbelt and flopped over. Well, whilst I just wonder when I wake up, what's the driver thinking about me as I'm snoring or drooling in the passenger seat? Actually, I do nod off very quickly as a passenger, but I'm rarely a passenger. But no, I just don't particularly. And then when you do wake up, even if it's been for a few minutes, you end up got a sore neck, or like it doesn't work. It's like going on a long haul plane in economy, and you've sort of fallen asleep like that. It takes you a week to get over a bad neck.
If I strongly believe that all of us has some sort of inbuilt dyslexia that means that now and again we look at a word and we can't quite decipher it. Everyone's sort of got something that means there's sometimes words are confusing. I think all of us also have, in that scenario, a bit of inbuilt Tourette's. Because when you come to in a car and you're a passenger, if you've nodded off, most people go, fuck. Or there's normally an expletive. You don't wake up and go, ooh, lovely meadows of flowers. You always wake up with an expletive. You're like, oh shit, or bollocks, or and if you
can we make meadows of flowers our little metaphor for something we'd rather not say in public.
Yes.
That's a brilliant one.
I've never liked sleeping in cars at all, but the last 20, 30 years of my life, I've had to on so many occasions. I can't really list the number of times I've had to sleep in cars. Most of them are down to me being disorganised. So before the internet really worked and you just had a mobile telephone and a map book, I would never plan any journey. I loved free form of travelling. I'd wake up, autocar would give me my money, and I would just go off in the test car and go and meet someone in Italy. And I wouldn't warn them where I was going to be. I'd just go off on adventures on my own. And that almost always meant I couldn't get a hotel. Also, if you've got budget to sleep in a hotel and you don't spend the money on the hotel, you can spend it on beer. So I would always, I'd always just sleep in the test cars. But it meant that when you arrived for the photo shoot with someone like Peter Robinson, you had to, the last 2 kilometres was windows down, because I think stank of, you know, what human beings smell of when they sleep. So I've slept in Lamborghinis, Ferraris. You learn, and there's a moment when you, and anyone that's ever slept in a car that shouldn't be slept in will know this. As you're just finding that position and your body's moving around, you're just working it out, you do always, always find the position in which your body goes, this isn't great, we can do this.
Yes.
When you find that little moment, and it could be that you've just articulated your rump around the gear lever, or the, you know, you just, your brain goes, right, this is it, we've got this now. And then you've got 3 or 4 hours sleep. But I agree with Neil, the idea of the micro-nap. I've got a friend, and he gets mentioned on this podcast a lot. I can't really micro-nap. I can micro-nap when I'm so tired that my body goes and shut down. And then I can do 15 minutes, but that's not me choosing. That's my body going red flag. But Richard Tuttle is the greatest micro-napper I've ever met in my life. Wherever we are in the world, if his brain goes, right, we'll have a sleep. We're like Neil, within a minute, he's asleep. He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is. He shares a nickname. This is the greatest nickname of all nicknames in sportsmen. What's Phil Tufnell's nickname? He used to be called it. The wicketkeeper would always go, well, bold cat. He was just known as Cat, because wherever he sat down, he'd fall asleep.
Yeah.
And I think it's the human skill I'm most jealous of, Neil. The idea of just, because I'm sure it's so wholesome and so good for your brain. You have the ability to go and stop.
Do you recline the seat? How far do you go back on the recline, Neil?
I do, if it's got a good recline, I do recline, but I don't need it. You know, like the car I drive the most, the 991 Turbo S, has got the buckets. They don't recline at all, but I can still have a quick 12 minutes.
on the 2022 RAC rally, that's the most difficult I've ever had in terms of trying to sleep. There was people might remember, there was a big hurricane came through Scotland, and we were up near Lockerbie, and all the beech trees started getting blown down around us, and every single road was closed. You couldn't get through the roads. It had been snowing. It was about -3 or -4 that night. And myself and my co-driver, Bryn, had to sleep in the car. We were pretty much isolated, and it was so cold. All the coats were on, but you just couldn't. I couldn't feel my legs from the knee down. And it just, I remember thinking, if I fall asleep, am I going to wake up here? That's the first time I've had that moment where you think, I'd like, my body wants to sleep, but it might be too cold. I might need to just stay awake here. That was in a fully upright Corbo bucket thing with the, that was.
Oh, you were in the rally car. Yeah.
Yeah. It was don't sleep in a rally Mark II Escort. There's not much room.
No.
Right. I posed this statement. So I'll take responsibility for it. Someone who remained nameless, who's a friend of mine, who might come from Scotland, sent me this. Gunther Steiner is the Eddie the Eagle of F1. I think there's quite a bit of truth in that. Who wants to respond to that first? Let's go, Chris Cooper.
I think there's some truth in it, but I think there are some significant differences. Eddie the Eagle was a lovable, hapless character in that he wasn't a great ski jumper. Everyone knows who Eddie the Eagle is, who listened to this. There was a famous film made about him, 1992, was it, Winter Olympics, he was there. He was a plasterer, labourer from Cheltenham. And somehow he decided that ski jumping was for him. He was largely out of his depth, but he was plucky, he was happy. He wasn't on an ego trip. It wasn't about him, it was about his love of the sport, blah, blah, blah. And in those instances, I think he's different to Gunther, if we're being serious. So Gunther has become, with his ambassadorship of the Miami Grand Prix and his presence, he's in danger of becoming a bit of a clown figure. And he's much brighter than that. Gunther is a very capable, senior technical leader in motorsport. He was a very effective technical director at Ford Rally. Yep. Back in the Focus days, wasn't it, Monkey?
Yep.
He was then technical director of Jaguar Racing when Jaguar was bought by Red Bull 2004-2005. Very, very good guy. And clearly he was very effective in getting Gene Haas. He came, you know, he was instrumental in coming up with the business model of how Haas automation of machine tools could enter F1 a bit more simply and cheaply than anybody had done before. So, and I think that sometimes when we've seen him on Drive to Survive, Gunter's had a bit of a darker streak. You know, we're all a bit sweary, but sometimes he's not been a happy chap when things have gone wrong with drivers or team personnel or whatever. So in those senses, I can see why at one level you might say he looks like he might be a bit of an Eddie the Eagle character. But I think on balance he isn't. If I was to say, would I rather go for a beer with Eddie the Eagle or Gunter Steiner? I probably quite enjoy a beer with both of them, probably not at the same time. That is my answer.
Yeah. Very good. Manish Pandey.
Well, I think you're being very kind there. I think Eddie the Eagle is a massively courageous figure. And that's something that I'm not entirely convinced you could say about Gunter Steiner, to jump off one of those.
Yeah, good point.
Very, very tiny thing. Listen, everything you say about him and his biography is all kind of fair. You know, he didn't finish his engineering degree. And if I remember correctly, the way he got his job at Jaguar was he was introduced to Niki Lauda, and Niki said, I don't know what you can do but turn up at work. And they kind of found his spot. But I think Chris's deeper point is, are we celebrating failure in a sport that is all about a microsecond, all about success, all about doing? I mean, you know, compare and contrast Christian Horner and Gunter Steiner. And I think, you know, it just says something about modern Formula One that somebody who has, in theory, been the face of and running a team with a very weird methodology, you know, building a car out of other cars' bits, always starts off well in the season, kind of ends up nowhere, becoming this massive TV personality for celebrating effectively his own failure. I do find that as a purist a little tricky. And, you know, you think about the people that the modern Formula One audience, you imagine walking into a room, do you think they'd recognize Frank Williams, if he was still alive? Think they'd recognize Patrick Head? Do you think they'd even recognize Adrian Newey? But they'd recognize Gunter Steiner. And I think that's my biggest problem with it. You know, you get these people, they are little moons and they eclipse the sun and they're celebrated for it. And I don't get it. I tried to read his book, you know, and I think Penguin wrote things like, you know, frank, superb, masterful, insightful, intelligent, witty. Really? You know, just blah. I mean, what is being the Miami ambassador? What is that job exactly?
Money is a job, isn't it?
But what is it? What do you do? What do you do in that job? That's what I would
like. Be Gunter.
Get money.
Be Gunter. Yeah.
Yeah, be Gunter. Edward, do you have strong feelings on Gunter Steiner?
Not really, other than, you know, if there weren't some interesting characters in this sport, it'd be even more dull. So more characters, more things to talk about.
Neil Clifford, I bet you have strong feelings on Gunter Steiner, don't you?
Well, you know what? My son, Vincent, knows much more about Formula One than me. And I asked him this question and he said, Dad, that's totally unfair. Haas is a shit team with or without Gunter. And the sort of, whatever his name is, Gene, who it's this sort of slightly weird character that's like Charlie's Angels. You know, the bloke in the leather chair that you never meet. And he sort of spins around and you never see his face. I mean, it's Gene's fault, isn't it? Not bloody Gunter.
Is it Gene's fault? The guy lives in America. He's got this guy running the team for him. Not for a year, Neil, for a decade.
No, but they're last now.
They're better this year. They're better this year than they were last year.
Chris, I mean, Neil, you'd fire him in a minute. If he weren't for you, he'd be out the door.
Well, no, but I think
Gene's got. Also, Neil, there's a slight technical issue with Gene's ability to travel.
Why?
He's not allowed to leave the US, I don't think, because of certain illegals. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'm not really into criticizing people just because they've got charisma and character.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a bit more interesting than most of the other people, aren't they? Hasn't he just got a bit more of a character than some of the slightly duller people in Formula One?
Yeah.
I like swears too. That's good. That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, we all like a bit of fucking swearing. It's good. yeah. I think, my point is this. I think nicely summarised by the phrase Manish is that a few moons can obstruct a sun.
I did like that.
I think that's a lovely phrase. I'll be plagiarising that.
Write that down.
I'll be saying that to my children when they're next really naughty. You are moons that are obstructing the sun, and I'll get my horner out, and I mean as in the digit. I don't and haven't really watched Drive to Survive. I think I've seen the first couple of episodes, and that's it. So I was immediate. So as Gunther's fame just sort of became meteoric, I wasn't really aware of it. And they keep cutting to him on the TV commentary, and I'd be thinking, why are they speaking to this bloke? He sounds a bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he seems to be at the back of the grid. But, you know, he's quite insightful, and he speaks quite fluently. He's just a Gunther Steiner, and Formula One is currently just experiencing what happens when you suddenly have television that exposes you to a massive audience. And the process of osmosis means that the audience decides which ones they're going to make heroes. You can put Adrian Newey there and say, right, he's the most important person in Formula One. But you've got a bloke walking down the pit lane saying wanker every other word. He's going to be much more interesting to an audience. So sadly, the meritocracy of television is, be careful what you wish for. It can be dangerous. That's why when you have Big Brother, Nasty Nick suddenly gets all the bloody headlines. But despite the fact that you probably shouldn't be interested in Nasty Nick. I'm not saying he is that. But my point, again, Manish was right. My point is that this person that's become incredible, him and Ricciardo are the two people that probably benefited the most from this television program on Netflix. You know, their fame has rocketed. And look at both of them are struggling to show their CVs have really improved an awful lot since that time. So I don't think fame helps the individual much. I've got my own views on that, having presented a certain TV program. I think fame... It's a bit like being made, if you're a very good test batsman and you're made captain, normally your average shits itself straight away, you know? So I feel sorry for them as individuals like that. But it is this idea of the most recognisable face in Formula One. If you were to stop a man on the street or a woman on the street and say, right, Formula One, give me word association. They go, oh, that Austrian dude that swears. Is he Austrian or is he Italian? He's Italian, isn't he?
He's Italian.
The guy that swears a lot. Well, I mean, what does that say about Formula One? You've got a guy that he hasn't won an awful lot. He sits at the back of the grid. And what did Bernie say? Bernie called him the most unsuccessful team manager in F1 history or something. Yes. I think of all things, Formula One, the reason why we tolerate the cutthroat, the reason why we tolerate the absurdities like the Red Bull scandal and stuff is it's just about getting your elbows out and winning. Formula One is the most winning sport. It's about winning. No one gives a shit who comes second. And I don't think he embodies that. And I find it quite odd that the sort of this emerging figurehead of the sport doesn't necessarily represent that. I'm not saying he's not capable of it. And I agree with Neil. It might be that it's not his fault. And that if he'd been with Adrian Newey at Red Bull, he might well have won multiple championships. But there's a suspicion that maybe he hasn't got that steeliness that a Horner's got. There's a reason why maybe Christian Horner isn't as liked by the masses as much. It's because he fucking wins the whole time. He's a winner.
I think that's true. I mean, what do we think about this Adrian rumour on Ferrari? It's building up, isn't it? Or is that just April Fool's Twitter?
Anything's possible.
Apparently Mr. Stroll's got his checkbook out as well. So there's all sorts of rumours doing the rounds.
I think so. If I was thinking about it, just because, you know, why wouldn't you think about it? He can't achieve any more at Red Bull. So if everyone will offer him whatever money he asks for, right? So money isn't an issue because he can just say his number and he'll get it, right? So if he's going to have one more feather in quite a feathery cap that he has already, he goes to Ferrari, right?
The only thing I would say about Ferrari is I think going and joining Ferrari is like literally arriving at a truck which is going down the hill very, very quickly already. It's got so much inertia and they kind of have direction. And I'm not saying he wouldn't make a difference. I think he'd make a massive difference. It just might take him two or three seasons to do it. Whereas I think a guy like that going to somewhere like Aston, especially if they've got a Honda engine, which I could see him going and making a difference in a season there.
Yeah, he'd have more influence.
And also he could drive to work. I suspect,
and he could drive
that
to work.
That would be quite appealing if you're Adrian.
Absolutely. Yes. So if I had a fiver spare, I'd put it. I mean, I agree with you. It's time for him to change. I think he should go to Aston. I think that would be amazing for Formula One. By the way, that brand.
Yeah. It'd be clever on Stroll. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, he'd make himself the Dietrich for Formula One, and that would be pretty cool.
That Bahrain race, I did think Jeremy nailed it on the pit walk interview with Martin. Martin Brothers, who's going to win? He said Adrian Newey. he's remarkable. Right, that comes across as a character assassination. It's not. I'm sure I'd love to have a beer with Günther Steiner. I think he's bloody brilliant. He didn't. You can argue he didn't decide to become famous. The TV show made him famous. But one of the dangers of a TV show making you famous is you inevitably you play up to the character that you've become on the TV show. Yeah. We've all done it. And you look back and think, God, did I really? Right. Moving on. The two-car garage. Which is this week is sponsored by Oil of Yule. So... You are a classy, attractive woman, 55 years of age. You've done good for yourself in life, had an amazing career, and celebrating your early pension. Unfortunately, your marriage hasn't worked out as well as your career, and you divorced your husband. You travel between London and the south of France regularly. You're afraid of flying, but love a good drive. From the divorce, you got some extra money you want to spend on two cars. Your daily driver is a Range Rover, and you want something else to cross France that's quiet but fast. Also, you want this car with the steering wheel on the left, with the steering wheel on the correct side, the left side, because you drive in Europe. The budget you have for this car is €200,000. My eyesight is not what it used to be. The second car is to drive around the Côte d'Azur. It needs to be a classic, reliable convertible, which needs to be loved by men younger than you, as you might be able to find your next husband. I need to meet this woman. The budget for this car... is €500,000. You did well. It sounds like you bought more into it and earned more money as well. Go, girl. Right. Edward Lovett.
Well, I think as her continental cruiser, I'm sort of trying to visualise what this 55-year-old woman, I'm thinking she's got blonde hair, large assets, quite confident. I think she's going to be in a new model Ghost. I think that's going to be her. I think she's going to need a Rolls Royce. So I think she's going to be in a new model Ghost to get herself down to the south of France.
Yeah.
And then when she's there, there's a lot of competition down there. A lot of it's going to be a lot younger.
Yeah.
But payable by the hour. She's obviously not payable by the hour, but... You know, she's going to want some young, handsome stud.
Just say a car name before we get shut down.
I was thinking what would appeal to me if I saw this lady driving past? What would I want to jump into her passenger seat in? And I think I think she might be running around in a 4.5 litre Bentley down there. I think that would stand out. And I think if I saw a 55-year young lady, I think I would probably want to jump in if she was in a 4.5 litre Bentley.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So I apologise to all the listeners there. He somehow managed
to... Why apologise? What were you apologising for?
Because you were being lewd.
Not really. I'm just trying to sort of visualise what this lady looks like.
Yeah, at least you managed to avoid the phrase twin airbags. Now, let's move on. Very good, Edward. Very, very good. I love the idea of seeing a beautiful, mature woman driving, wrestling with a 4.5-litre Bentley. Manish, what would you have as your two cars?
Well, you know, you flip this around. I think this woman is my age and wants to basically bed a bloke as 10 years younger. That's what she wants to do, basically. I think that, you know, it's obvious, this one. This is entirely, Edward's got this entirely right. This is an entirely sexual metaphor story. There's a woman of a certain age and she wants it younger. I don't know why she got her divorce from her 78-year-old rich husband, but I would guess 45 is the answer. So I found a rather beautiful Bentley Continental GT V8 Mulliner, and it was in dark sapphire blue, dark tan, just 6,000 kilometers on the clock. Now, it's in Provence. You can buy it. It's in Provence. It's €225,000. I know I'm €25,000 over, but I will make this up.
Good deal.
I found, I was just imagining what would really, really turn my head if you saw a very beautiful, slightly older woman. And you know what it would be? It would be a car that's about her age, but that's mint. That's what you want. And I think she buys a 1965 Series 1 4.2-litre E-Type Jaguar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's been restored by XK Engineering with lots of Eagle upgrades. And I found this thing in azure blue with black.
Yeah.
77,000 miles on it, and it was €380,000. So I've got €100,000 left. And do you know what you do with that? You go and see Britain's best...
Fake tits.
No, you go and see Britain's best facial cosmetic surgeon, a guy called Mr. Sorensen. And he will do very, very subtle things to her. And within...
What about month, surgery, though?
Yes, yes, surgery. He will do very subtle things to her face. So, yeah, she is going to look younger, more subtly, after a month post Jesper surgery. She's going to pull 30-year-old boys. That's what she's going to do. She's going to look so good. I wouldn't go pneumatic. I would just go for very subtle facial changes, little blepharoplasty, get rid of the crow's feet in the bags, just a little bit of just making sure she's got cheekbones back. He won't use any fillers. He has his own instruments. That is what I would do with that money.
I like it, Manish. It's fraught with some risk, because if the car breaks down and the cosmetics aren't too right, she's going to look like an extra from the Sweeney stood by the side of the road wearing a stocking on her face, having robbed a bank. but it could work. Chris Cooper.
So I think this is Candice Bergen. She's an actress, and she was in it's quite an old film now. There's a film called 11 Harrow House, which was a classic. Manish, you know 11 Harrow House?
I haven't seen that. I know Candice Bergen.
Classic. Though. It's great. It's got great cars in it. Had Lotus Europa and I think a 246 Dino GTS. It's a classic caper movie. She was a diamond thief. So I think she's done well, this lady, because she's a diamond thief. So there's a little bit of subterfuge going on here. And this is how she makes her way through life. So I think for travel between London and south of France, and I had this conversation with Finn and Cam last night, I never say Bentley. I don't know why I don't, but I've almost never said Bentley in answer to any of these questions. But on car number one, it's a Bentley. It's Bentley Continental GT W12. It's sort of the only car. It's got to be, you know, and, you know, this very kind chap from Amsterdam who sent us this this thing. And thank you for your support. So it just say in here, it's got to be quiet and fast. And you're going between South France and London the whole time. So the car number one, I think, is a Bentley Continental GT, W12 probably. Car number two is a bit more interesting. Second car is to drive around the Côte d'Azur. It needs to be a classic, reliable convertible. So an E-Type, even one that's fettled, might still, because it's on carbs. South of France, carbs don't really work well in South of France and heat and all those kind of things, starvation, blah, blah. And Italian stuff. So because I think there's a bit of subterfuge involved here, I think she might have a Ferrari 365 GTC convertible, but not a real one. This is, you can't see it. So this is on sale at Sports and Classics, is it?
Best place up near Sport and Classic, yeah.
Bell Sport and Classic, yeah. So they've got, it was converted by Grey Paul back in the 70s, I think. So it's 499K. And I think that's sort of, it's a slight, you know, they're very clear what it is. There's a slight subtle subterfuge in there, which I think is very much in the character of this lady to make her way through life. So I think she'd either have that or for, because that might not be reliable, it's Italian.
How many cars
I
do you
go
want?
To, well, Bentley GT is the first one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think the second one, if you didn't want that much subterfuge, would be you go to Mr. Tuthill and get him to do a lovely Targa 911, 964 based, super duper thing, not quite singer money, but you can get it for 500,000 euros. And yeah. I think the young men of South of France would find a resto mod 911 in the current world very appealing.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's some money left over to fix your Wi-Fi.
Yes, there is. You're dropping in and out, Mr. C, but we can still hear you.
We can hear you, but you're
okay. So Neil Clifford.
Pixelated.
Oh, the right answer really is the Bentley Continental GT bloody W12, and I'm annoyed. But anyway, I did have a plan B because I knew that everyone would choose that. I'm going Aston DB12 because they're going to be 200,000 euros. Because that's quiet. The keyword was quiet. Otherwise, you'd have gone 911. But no 911 is that bloody quiet driving down to the South France. They're all a bit bloody noisy.
The new 992 Turbo S is getting towards being quiet. It's got a lot of the tire noise has gone. If like us, you think 911s are too noisy, drive a 992 Turbo. They are quite quiet. Well, sorry.
991 is everything brilliant apart from it's bloody noisy, really. Yeah. And then classic convertible. Reliable is equals German, really. You can't really do British because it will break down. Italian's better than British, but it will still break down. So you sort of need German because it probably won't break down. And you can't afford a 300 SL Roadster because that is the coolest convertible classic thing. And therefore, if you can't get that, the only other one, and you're all wrong on this, really, the only other one is a 356 Speedster. And you probably... Yeah. Stretch to a pre-A, so you get the four headlights at the back, and any bloke who knows what he's talking about thinks that's just a mega cool classic. And every bloke's going to be jumping in that car. Black, Speedster, left hooker, pre-A, minty, gorgeous. Yeah. Never break down.
Speedster's a good call.
Yeah, it's a good call. Didn't think of that.
It's a very good two-car garage. Sadly, it's obviously wrong. The car, there's too many Bentleys here. I hate to say it, and I don't like to trade in stereotypes, but if you see a woman of a certain age driving a Bentley Continental, you do think that's her husband's car. It has a look to it, and I'm not sure it's for either fair or it's very good. So I'm steering clear of that.
Her ex-husband's car in this case.
I think this woman is discerning as well. And I'm going to also expose one of the quirks I've got about European cars. She likes driving, this woman, and she wants a proper car. She's always had very fast estate cars because she's discerning. And her means of getting to the south of France is obviously, because she doesn't like the latest one, it's the previous RS6. It's a C7 RS6. It's in verdant green, which is a very dark green. It's got that special order Audi exclusive caramel interior. It's got clear glass. Yeah. It's been to MTM. It's got a quiet 750 on it, but you don't know. About 750 horsepower. But she has it registered in Stade because the Swiss number plate looks absolutely perfect front and rear on an RS6. And there's nothing cooler than a Swiss plate on the South of France. I don't know why. I just think Swiss registered cars look the bollocks. Their number plates are the best. So she has a Swiss registered, beautiful, MTM tuned green RS6, clear glass, to go forwards and backwards. Her car, and I'm surprised Edward didn't get this right, because normally he gets this absolutely bang on, does Edward. This is a classic. It's a modern classic. It looks sensational. It's totally reliable. It turns
BMW Z8.
Exactly. That's what it is. It's a Z8. Because that I keep looking at them, and I just think that it is the coolest car. She gets to subvert the whole Bond car thing. I mean, she is going to be... She's going to be busy. That's what she's going to be. She's going to be busy. She's going to be dating a lot. So that's those. It's very German, I know, but I think Z8 is the answer there.
Yeah, good call. I'm going to have to go. I'm waiting on a meeting on the other line. So I'll see you all later.
Well, I'll choose to meet you for you, Edward.
Thank you very much. See you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay.
Fred again.
Let's do some music then. So Neil Clifford.
I got sent a message on Instagram by a guy who's driving around the world with his son in an Aston Martin Vantage. Phil and Will Churchill are their names, and they're driving around for charity. You can sponsor them on their website, which is vantageworldtour.com. The campaign against living miserably, which is basically a campaign to help and eradicate, reduce male suicide. So it's a good cause. And a guy has released a song, a singer called Tom Walker. The song's called Lifeline, and it's to raise money for these two amazing people driving around the world in Aston Martin Vantage. And I would love to recommend that, because the song is actually really cool. And what a brilliant thing, driving around the world in an Aston and raising money for a cause that is, you know, relatively silent and relatively, well, is a huge big deal, right? Because 1 in 6 men think about suicidal thoughts. So I would suggest that, if I may.
Very good.
Very, very good. Very, very good. Go and have a look at the page. Manish, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go for a talk track. It was from the album Spirit of Eden, which I guess is what now, 35, 36 years
what
old?
What an album. What an album.
It really is. It's the first track, The Rainbow. I remember getting this as an album, just putting it on, expecting something a bit poppy, and going on a trip. And the opening, the great Kerrang, the crash, and then it just empties to nothing, and that beautiful Mark Hollis voice cuts through, and he just, you know, this for me is one of the great albums, and this track, particularly Rainbow, what a way to begin an album.
Lovely. I'll have a listen to that. That sounds great.
Chris Cooper.
I've got two, one for Edward, one for me.
Go.
If your grandmother or any other member of your family should die whilst in the shelter, put them outside. But remember to tag them first for identification purposes. Two tribes. Frankie goes to Hollywood. Spent the weekend driving around Cornwall, and my thing was plugged in. It seemed to play it the whole time. The other song, though, this one's for me. Whizzing around Cornwall all weekend, listening to pirate radio, Cornwall's favourite. And I've got a bone to pick on that. Pirate radio has been bought by that national network Hits Radio. The pirate radio brand is disappearing. No. Hands
really?
Off pirate radio. Hands off. No. But the whole weekend, it seemed, the only song I heard on pirate radio was brilliant. It's called Vampire by Olivia Rodrigo. Listen to it. It's brilliant. It's brilliant for driving. It's got a rising tempo. Excellent. Vampire by Olivia Rodrigo.
So it's about 2 a.m. You're fresh. You knew you were going to have this drive. You've got into your car. It's got a fantastic stereo. And you want a tune that's just going to make you think, right, I'm on it now. And it's this is electronic dance music by Art Bat. And it's the tune Horizon. Put it on. It's got this thumping bass that just starts off. And I watch your speed is what I'll say. Watch your speed, because it'll get you into a groove. Art Bat Horizon. An odd name for a great track. Thank you very much to Edward Lovett, who's gone, Manish Pandey, Neil Clifford, and Chris Cooper for joining us all on episode 59. We'll hopefully see you, or you'll hear us, for episode 60. Bye-bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.